That's Chuck Berry. And joining us, I believe, is the bluesologist Norman Otis Richmond. Are you there, Norman?
Yes, I am. I'm on the outside, but I'm ready.
Yeah, just a man about town. That's exactly who we want to talk to. Norman, that man is 90 years old. What a career. Who, in your view, how important is he?
Well, I think he's one of the he's definitely one of the founders and the architects in terms of the king. That's you know, I thought if he's the king, then Little Richard is the king and queen of rock and roll. And you know, there's others, Bo Diddley, and
yes,
and I thought I have a picture with Bo Diddley, Little Richard, Chuck Berry, and Willie Dixon, but Chuck Berry's influence was tremendous. I think he influenced the pop side more than the other folks because he consciously wanted to be a crossover artist. He was cold and calculating that way. Little Richard didn't care if you liked him or not. He was Little Richard.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was crazy, he was gay, he was everything. And if you accepted him, that was good. And if you didn't accept him, that was good, too. But Chuck Berry cold-bloodedly calculatedly, if that's a word,
yep,
wanted the young teenage audience, especially the white audience. I think that was the difference between he and
really
Richard. But in terms of the influence that he had on the musicians of the world, Chuck Berry definitely is definitely in that pantheon.
Yeah, but we ought to say, should we not, that this was a man who was born in segregated America. And when I say segregated, I mean by law, accepted by the Democratic Party, matter of fact, constructed by the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. That was the way it's going to be. And he was in St. Louis, where I saw him one time in a little video saying, "Here I am standing in front of a theater. There's going to be a big crowd tonight. When I was a little boy, they wouldn't let me in this theater." How conscious was he? What was his thinking? And by the way, he went through the whole thing. I mean, the transformation of America, he had a lot to do with it.
Well, I just saw a video of Keith Richards, and Keith Richards is talking about his greatest hit. Chuck Berry's greatest hit was when he said Chuck Berry, he did a show with Chuck Berry, and Chuck Berry, he saw Chuck Berry's guitar, and he couldn't resist picking it up and trying to play it. And Chuck Berry came in and saw him with his guitar and punched Keith Richards in his face. And Keith Richards laughed and said, "You know, that was Chuck Berry's greatest hit." No, he was a no-nonsense character. Completely no-nonsense. There's a film called Cadillac Records, which is about Chess Records, and it basically, he stood his ground. He refused to sleep in segregated hotels. He slept in his own car, and, you know, they talk about him being a cheapskate. I don't think he died broke. I haven't read anything like that.
No.
He was a good business person, and he wanted cash or certified check. You know, you couldn't just, and he wouldn't come on before you paid him. But he was a no nonsense type of a guy, and he stood up for the common musician. And I only saw him twice. I saw him once at the Albert's Hall on Bloor Street, and he never had a band. I mean, he didn't walk with a band. He always hired musicians in any city he came in. I guess everybody knew his songs. I saw him once at Albert Hall, and I saw him once in the airport in Los Angeles, and I was with my uncle. And I just couldn't believe how short he was, you know.
Really?
He must have been about 5'5", 5'6", you know, but many of the greats have been short. Bob Marley, Bunny Wailer, Little Willie John, and when I went to Africa, I just
took my hat off when you said Little Willie John.
When I was in Ghana,
uh-huh,
you know, in the southern part of Ghana, I didn't see that many tall folks. But then when you got into the northern part, you know, the people were 6 feet over. But Chuck was a very small person.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see him on those videos or on TV, he looked like a towering figure.
Slender.
When I saw him in the airport, I couldn't believe. I said, this is Chuck Berry. This guy is...
Well, he probably weighed 120 pounds then, because he's a very slender man.
Extremely slender. Oh, yeah, he was... Yeah, he had no...
Hey.
Had no body fat on him at all.
He but had some good moves.
Records, great film, and his stars Most Def. And Most Def plays Chuck Berry, and it is a... to show you how great it was when it played in Toronto, it only could play at the Bloor Cinema. When it was the Bloor Cinema, they wouldn't let it in the regular theaters.
Wow. Hey, now, listen, it's very important, isn't it, to talk about... Well, you're talking about he's very bright. Well, he's a very well-educated guy. His mother was a school principal, and his father was a contractor.
Oh, yeah, he talked about his...
He grew up playing classical piano.
Yeah, he talked about his... His sister always would play Beethoven on the piano, and he wrote that song "Roll Over Beethoven" because he wanted to. That was basically like a dig at his sister because he couldn't get any time because his sister was always playing Beethoven, and but he was big on diction.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was very big on diction, and Little Richard. Like I was always a Little Richard man, but Little Richard was a like I said, if you understood him good, if you didn't, that was good too. But you know, I guess it was a big difference between Wop Pop a Loom Up a Lop Bam Boom,
mm-hmm.
and you know what Chuck Berry, Sam Cooke, those guys emphasized diction, and I guess coming from the black experience. The whole question of being under Sam Cooke taught his artists not to eat your words, you know, so to be able to understand everything you could say.
Yeah.
And I'm of two thoughts about that because the world couldn't understand a word Bob Marley was saying, and Bob Marley could speak English as well, or maybe even better than me. But you would never know it from listening to his records because he sang and he spoke in patois. He let Peter Tosh do all of the talking.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Tosh recorded Johnny B. Goode, by the way. But yeah, Chuck Berry was a very, very articulate and educated human being, definitely without a doubt.
Yeah, he was. You described that combative side to him. People should go and look at the old interviews done with him and some of the interviews he organized himself, which is really interesting, where he sat down. I saw him sit down with Little Richard and somebody else, and he was pushing the buttons on those guys about the business and how they got ripped off. And he wanted to talk about who did the ripping off. And they were shy, but he was aggressive in the way he was going about that. I want to ask you about this. I saw somebody who was at Chess Records, a musician, I guess a house musician, but he said the first time Chuck Berry came in here, he said, and was playing, he said, we all looked at him and said, who's this hillbilly? He said he was playing hillbilly music. What's he talking about?
Well, when I had an uncle who I saw Chuck Berry with at the airport, he was a country and western man and a gospel man. And God, country and western is big in Jamaica. Country and western is big in Ghana. I remember one time I was in Abri, Ghana, which is in the hills of Accra, Ghana. And the queen mother there, we listened to country music all day. And I think that...
I had the same experience in Burkina Faso.
Julius Nyerere wanted to see Charlie Pride, and President Carter chartered a plane for Julius Nyerere to go to Nashville to see Charlie Pride. But no, black people.
My gosh!
Like country music. Because at one time, that was the only stations you could hear were...
You're right.
Were country stations, so...
Well, it was segregated radio.
Give you a little Negro spirituals maybe every Sunday or something, but our folk grew up with country music.
Yeah. Well, you would agree then that when we're going to... When they start this stuff of who's the father of rock and roll, which they kind of wear themselves out with this stuff, but he's got to be one of the people you talk about.
He's definitely in the top two or three. In terms of the influence, his guitar playing, John Lennon, Keith Richards, unfortunately, the world that we live in is a colonized world, and the white folks, big white folks, say you're the king, then that's the way it's going to be written. Because when I know that from writing for the Toronto Star, the only way I was able to write for the Toronto Star was, I mentioned the fact that Peter Tosh had played with the Rolling Stones, and once I said the Rolling Stones, you're in.
Yeah, then that was
Bobby Womack. He played with the role. The Bobby Womack song, the first song Bobby Womack recorded, was re-recorded by the Rolling Stones. So you're in. So that's the way.
Yeah, that is kind of worrying. Part of this is that, like I started the show, I mentioned how important he was, and I noticed that all the major media, when they want to tell you whether he's important, they quote a white artist.
Oh yeah, but I saw the Toronto Star. There's a story about. Chuck Berry in the Toronto Star today, they don't even mention Little Richard.
Yeah. Well, I got news for him. All he has to do is show up, and there's 100,000 people. Otis, I got to ask you something else. I saw you on this past weekend at a different book list, and there was an important gentleman there who's written an autobiography, Mr. Jolly. You said some complimentary things to him. I think it's worth mentioning. Let's get people to get this book. Tell him, where do you, his importance in our city?
Well, Denham Jolly was the owner of Flo. He started off as a school teacher, and then he owned a nursing home. He bought Contrast, and he bought Flo. And basically, I worked with him on many fronts, and... we started an organization called the Afro-American Progressive Association, which was one of the first black power organizations in Canada. And our initial meetings were held at one of his properties, mm-hmm. our planning meetings. And his book, In the Black, basically tells you the story, his story, and he's not shy about criticizing how the Toronto police forces have treated African people. In fact, he read a chapter at the bookstore, and he opened up with the fact that, as a 70-plus-year-old man, how he was stopped by the police and harassed by the police. That's how he starts the book off.
That chapter alone is worth the price of the book. That is very – and he read it with great, I would say, gravitas. I was very impressed with that.
And he always has supported me at, I remember when my son was born, I was living on Havenbrook Boulevard, and I remember Denham Jolly driving up to my house with cases of Similac. And, and then he helped me when my son went to Kumon, the Kumon school.
Mm-hmm.
Where they had the Kumon how to read situation,
mm-hmm.
Jolly paid for that. So I'm in debt to Denham Jolly.
Well, we all are, and that is a great book. Norman Otis Richmond, we appreciate your comments. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Okay, doke. Bye bye. That's the bluesologist, and we're going to hear a little bit of Roll Over Beethoven.